not witnessed anything of this magnitude, with this kind of outpouring of public emotion, adulation, and affection, really since 1963, since John F. Kennedy was tragically assassinated during his first term as President of the United States. And we had a state funeral in Washington modeled on the state funeral of another assassinated president, Abraham Lincoln, in 1865. In fact, the Kennedy family had scholars going into the Library of Congress at night where the lights were on, a timer, and couldn't be turned on, and with flashlights, they rehearsed the extraordinary funeral of Abraham Lincoln, based the Kennedy funeral on that. And this spectacle, this extraordinary spectacle we're witnessing today, harkens back to Lincoln, and even before that, the first state funeral was not George Washington, as some may think. There was no state funeral for George Washington. There was no remains brought to Washington. There was a small funeral in Mount Vernon, and then funerals all over the country held in the absence of the body of the president. The first full state funeral was William Henry Harrison in 1841, the first president to die in office, who in fact became ill after a lengthy inaugural address in bad weather and died just a month in office. And there was an extraordinary state funeral for William Henry Harrison, beginning the tradition, of course, that continued through Lincoln and Roosevelt and Kennedy and many others. Now, what we also have seen with Lincoln and Roosevelt is something we will not see this time, but it was of great historical significance, and that is the president's train. Few people remember that Lincoln's remains were taken by train along a 1,700-mile route from Washington to Springfield, Illinois, where he was buried. It took some 17 days, and he was celebrated everywhere as he followed along that route. Franklin Roosevelt, his remains were transferred from Warm Springs, Georgia, by train up to Washington, D.C. as well. And people mourned and, of course, celebrated the life of the great Franklin Roosevelt as the train wended its way to Washington, D.C.
Today, a very different situation as President Reagan's remains came east from California on one of the Air Force One fleet train. No more.
Exactly. I think two things are important in that symbolism. One, of course, the technological transformation of the nation. And number two, the movement from west to east. Politically, of course, Ronald Reagan represented the triumph in American politics of the great American Sunbelt, the president from California, the president who's had powerful support in the South and the West and the West Coast. It represented a true political transformation in American life for power to be transferred to the newer western and southern areas, and in particular for the Republican Party, which had been known as the Party of the Northeast, the Party of New England, the Party of men like Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts, Theodore Roosevelt of New York. Its center now, of course, is in the West.
Alan Lichtman, give us a sense in more recent times, because it's been so long since we've seen a full state funeral, of how exactly it's decided what the ceremony will be for a particular president at passing. Who decides whether it will be a large ceremony or small, very grand or modest? How's it put together?
Ironically, the president himself, during his lifetime, and the presidential family decides whether they should get a full state funeral like this one or perhaps a more simple remembrance. One of the reasons we haven't had a full state funeral in the Capitol since 1973 was that Richard Nixon, the most recent president to die in 1994, deliberately decided not to have a state funeral in Washington, but rather to have his ceremonies in the Nixon Library in California. Now, we don't know, of course, exactly why, but one could infer that Nixon was driven from the Capitol and that this was his way of saying, I do not want to be celebrated and remembered by these Washington insiders who drove me from the presidency. After all, he was the only president to resign. Harry Truman, although certainly did not leave the presidency the same way that Richard Nixon did, when he died, he also decided he had decided in his planning to, when he would die, to also have a simple ceremony at the Truman Library in his home of Independence, Missouri. Truman was, you know, the haberdasher who became president.
We read today, Alan Lichtman. He said he wanted to be in his in the library, in his library in Independence, Missouri. He said, "I want to be out there," he said, gesturing to the library courtyard, "so I can get up and walk into my office if I want to." Meanwhile, in Washington today, President Reagan's, Ronald Reagan's, remains on the caisson now at the base of the steps, long, great steps on the west side of the U.S. Capitol building. Nancy Reagan has emerged to view a salute you can hear in the background on howitzers there on the Capitol lawn to Ronald Reagan. She is on the arm of an army general. The casket remains on the caisson, drawn by six dark horses, three mounted, three unmounted, and in the perimeter, the empty saddle of a horse with boots in stirrups and reversed. Soldiers standing at attention as the salute goes forward. And you hear the military bands now striking up those old and august notes. The military honor guard is now assembled on each side of the casket, which is draped, nearly wrapped in an American flag. They are now slowly, step by step, sliding off the rear of the caisson to be carried up the steps of the Capitol building, west side, into the Capitol Rotunda. Alan Lichtman, caisson was originally designed to carry cannon into battle. It's become associated with American presidential funerals.
Indeed, it was carried ammunition, it carried cannon, it was an instrument of war, and of course, state funerals are very heavily laden with military ceremony, with military pomp and circumstance. And indeed, Lincoln's body was carried in a caisson, Kennedy's body was carried in a caisson as well. I believe it might have been the same one that carried the bodies of other presidents prior to John F. Kennedy. It is a strong, sturdy, powerful wagon, symbolic of the strength of the presidency and the power of the presidency.
When you observe the ceremonies today, I come back to this again because it's been so long since we've seen them. What do you read into these particular services, as you say, modeled on the funeral services, elaborate funeral services of John F. Kennedy? Of course, very different circumstances. An assassination, the country dumbstruck at that young leader falling in office. Ronald Reagan, years out of office, having died at age 93 after a 10-year struggle with Alzheimer's. And yet a very large scale and grand funeral. What's your political reading of this display?
Yes. You know, a president has achieved greatness when a president comes to represent an entire American tradition. Franklin Roosevelt was a truly great president, in part because he came to represent the liberal tradition in the United States. Ronald Reagan has come to represent the conservative tradition in the United States. And this is of paramount political importance, given the importance of conservatism during the 25 years or so since Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980. He revived a conservatism in America that had been in eclipse since the days of Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover. But what I think is so important, and what explains so much of the adulation here, that really this kind of emotion, as you say, had only been reserved for tragic presidential assassinations like Lincoln and Kennedy. What you're seeing here, I think, is that Ronald Reagan revived conservatism, not by narrowing it to a zealous base, but by making it more optimistic, more positive, more inclusive. So even those who did not necessarily believe in the values and policies that Ronald Reagan followed could understand the power and influence and importance of the man and have a great deal of affection for the man, who was always straightforward in his ideology. He told you exactly what he was going to do when he ran for president in 1980. He said he was going to get the government off people's backs, get the hands out of people's pockets, build up the military, and restore America to preeminence. And to the best of his ability, that is precisely what he did. So he can be respected for his integrity, for his optimism, for his inclusiveness, and, of course, for his ability to connect with the American people, to establish that special mystical bond that only great American presidents are able to do. Kennedy and Roosevelt, in many ways, did it with their extraordinary eloquence. As eloquent as Ronald Reagan was, in part he did it with his extraordinary self-deprecating humor. I'll never forget during the 84 campaign when he looked old and faltering, he said, "I am not going to make the age an issue. I'm not going to exploit the youth and inexperience of my opponent." With one line, he dispelled an entire issue and again connected in a personal way with the American people.
And now Ronald Reagan, the oldest American president in history, at his inauguration, is carried up the western steps of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., as the late day sun sinks to the strains of the battle hymn of the Republic. Being carried very slowly up the stairs, a very heavy casket with a long way to go, military honor guard with members of each service represented. There will be three flights of the military honor guard on the way up, sharing the burden and, I guess, the privilege in military terms of carrying this president to where he will lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda. Nancy Reagan, the general at her side, watching on as the casket now passes directly by her on its way up the stairs, just 6 or 8 feet from President Reagan's widow, who's just reached out to touch the blue field of stars at the rear of the casket as the military honor guard has passed by. Nancy Reagan looking still entirely recognizable. A slight woman now sports oversized glasses. She came out of the jet today as the president's remains emerged from the 747 that brought him east from California. California, where we are told 100,000 members of the public came out to pass by Ronald Reagan's casket in Simi Valley. The band goes on. The president continues his ascent. Alan Lichtman, quite a congregation of dignitaries assembled, we're told, inside the rotunda at this hour. The full cabinet, the Supreme Court, the vice president, of course, will speak. A number of heads of state, and we're told, though I don't have the exact count, we'll see soon, a number of former U.S. presidents. What's the difference between what's taking place here this evening and what will take place Friday at the National Cathedral, Alan Lichtman?
Well, Friday, this is a ceremony simply, as you note, for national and international dignitaries. Then Friday, we're going to have the main funeral ceremonies with a eulogy by the President of the United States, George W. Bush, and I understand it as well, a taped eulogy by Margaret Thatcher. And of course, many argue it was Ronald Reagan in tandem with Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s that moved not just this nation but the world towards a new conservatism and helped transform the world in fundamental ways, not just the end of the Cold War, but also moving towards a united Europe. And in many ways, Ronald Reagan, who embraced free trade in a political party that was not always a free trade party, Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher also pushed the world towards the modern global economy, marked by free enterprise economics and by a free trade philosophy. So indeed, there is Hoover. right, but those were not tightly contested elections, and you did not have funerals of this magnitude or the celebration of a legacy in quite this way. This will have, I think, profound impact on presidential politics. Number one, it stops presidential politics.
Briefly.
It's a necessary pause for reflection. Number two, I think you'll see at the Republican convention, George W. Bush drawing upon the legacy of Ronald Reagan.
Drawing on the legacy of Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely. And it's going to be more difficult for Mr. Kerry. He is not the president of the United States. He does not have a central role in these remembrances, in these ceremonies. He is going to be an outsider looking in. And, of course, as a liberal Democrat, in many ways, he is in fundamental disagreement with aspects of the Reagan legacy, the dependence upon tax cuts, which Democrats have argued tilted towards the rich. Democrats would argue the neglect of minorities and women. So in many ways, the legacy of Ronald Reagan, while like all great presidents, is a national legacy, but nonetheless, it is also tinged with partisanship, which in this election year is inevitably going to affect the presidential race.
Alan Lichtman, let me describe the scene at this point. Ronald Reagan's casket has been carried into the Capitol building at the top of the Western Stairs. It is now just outside the doorway of the rotunda, very large and awe-inspiring rotunda, as anyone who has ever stood there well knows, surrounded with statues of figures of great significance in American history. Dignitaries assembled right across that rotunda now, including the family of Ronald Reagan. The casket will be brought in, placed in the center of the rotunda on, we are told, the same rough pine catafalque, I believe is the word, Alan Lichtman.
Catafalque, excuse me.
That held the remains of Abraham Lincoln.
That's right.
That pine catafalque covered with a shroud upon which the president's casket will be laid. It is a very full rotunda this evening of men and women in dark suits, honor guard at the door of the rotunda. Alan Lichtman, no Democrats speaking this evening. Is that traditional? Is it standard? Is it unusual?
Well, at the funeral, the most recent funeral we had of Richard Nixon, I do not believe any Democrats spoke either. If my recollection is correct, Henry Kissinger spoke, Bob Dole spoke, Billy Graham spoke, Pete Wilson, the governor of California, spoke, but none of the great Democrats spoke. And at the funeral of Lyndon Johnson, however, I believe Earl Warren, nominally a Republican, of course, a Republican before he became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, did speak. You know, you were talking about lying in the rotunda on the catafalque on which the body of Abraham Lincoln also was laid in state. It might be interesting for me to read, just will take a minute if you're interested, the New York Times summation of the funeral of Abraham Lincoln. I think it's very evocative of the current ceremonies.
Please, let's hear.
Yes. The solemn and imposing ceremonies of the day are over. And in point of sad sublimity and moral grandeur, the spectacle has been the most impressive ever witnessed in the nation's capital, the most impressive ever witnessed in the nation's capital. The commonality in the nation, the depth of feeling, the decorum, the good order, and the complete success of all the arrangements, the solemn dignity which pervaded all of the funeral, will mark the obsequies of Abraham Lincoln as the greatest pageant ever tendered and the greatest honor ever given the dead on this continent.
This, the New York Times, on the funeral services of Abraham Lincoln.
Yes. April 20th, 1865.
In this June of 2004, we will hear shortly, I expect first, from the House Chaplain, Reverend Daniel Coughlin, Catholic Chaplain, Chaplain of the House of Representatives. The rotunda now quiet as the assembled dignitaries, several hundred we're told, wait for the casket to be carried in. It is just outside the doorway. The military honor guard stands ready to proceed. We will hear in the next hour or so from Vice President Dick Cheney, Alaskan Senator Ted Stevens, Republican, President Pro Tem of the U.S. Senate, and Dennis Hastert, Congressman, Republican from Illinois, and House Speaker. You can hear the cameras clicking in the rotunda. Great silence. Guests in attendance all standing. The catafalque awaiting President Reagan's casket, exactly in the center of the great rotunda. A modest podium some 15 feet to the side, from which the assembled audience there will be addressed this evening. And, of course, the great white statues of figures from America's political and military past that stand silently around the perimeter of the Capitol Rotunda.
Can I make a quick point here?
Al Lechtman, please.
Yes. You know, we talked about the fact that no Democrats are speaking. I think that is in some ways unfortunate because, of course, while Ronald Reagan was a partisan figure, all great presidents pass on a legacy to all Americans. And I would have thought in the spirit of bipartisanship and the kind of friendships that Ronald Reagan had across party lines. You know, as bitter as the partisan wars were in the days of Reagan, they're not as bitter as the partisanship today. The nation is much more polarized along partisan lines. And perhaps it would have been a touch of remembrance of a different time to have more of a bipartisan presentation. I don't know whether Democrats were asked and declined, but I think it's unfortunate that it has a bit of a partisan tinge.
President Reagan, on famously talkative terms with former Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill.
Absolutely.
The military color guard bearing the American flag has now entered the rotunda, passed around the empty catafalque awaiting the casket of President Reagan, and is now standing at attention to the side. The brown shroud over the catafalque, which is, I would say, 2 or 3 feet high from the ground where the casket will shortly be placed. Again, full circle of dignitaries waiting, honor guard members standing just at the end of the catafalque. So everyone awaits the entrance of the president's casket.
Al Lechtman. Well, points about lying in state in the rotunda. The remains of President Reagan, of course, are going to be lying in state until Friday. That's an extraordinary lengthy period of time.
Yeah.
I don't believe any modern president has had that long a period of lying in state in the rotunda. Usually it's just a day or so for the public to pass by and pay their respects. This is an extraordinary week-long lengthy celebration, a longer really than anything in modern history that we have witnessed.
The casket now coming in, carried by the honor guard, to the center of the rotunda, preparing to lie in state until, as Alan Lichtman says, Friday, a very long lying in state. Many expect it to pass by, as many as 250,000, we are told, are expected. The honor guard now approaching the low platform where the president's casket will rest. And now standing, all facing the casket, four men on each side, now doing in deliberate, slow sidestep an advance on the catafalque where the casket will be lowered, fully covered in the great American flag. It is heavy, and these robust young men are clearly working to pull it over the platform where it will stand. Nancy Reagan looking on, drawn, but dignified. Her hands playing one against the other briefly, surrounded by members of her family. The honor guard has now set the casket on the catafalque where it will remain for 3 days. They're standing erect again on either side. The Capitol Rotunda, of course, along its perimeter, marble statues of primarily of American presidents, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses Grant, Andrew Jackson, Thomas Jefferson. There is much talk in Washington these days, Alan Lechtman, of further steps to honor and remember Ronald Reagan.
Indeed. Oh, one thing, I think I may have transposed a president's name earlier. I said Earl Warren, I think, spoke at Johnson. In fact, he spoke, of course, at the Kennedy Memorial,
of course,
not that of
yeah.
Johnson.
Yeah.
Yes, there has already been several dozen important buildings, roads across the nation. Named
Excuse me one moment, Alan Lechtman. The chaplain is about to pray.
The poet T.S. Eliot wrote, "Neither does the actor suffer, nor the patient act, but both are fixed in an eternal patience, an eternal act. And the wheel turns. The wheel turns and is forever still." Ronald Wilson Reagan had many roles to play in life. Husband, father, governor. But the most notable role on the world stage was that of the 40th President of the United States of America. With his style and grace, he made it seem easy. With his compassion and sense of timing, he brought strength of character to the nation and enkindled hope in a darkened world. As the patient, he brought humility to greatness and presided over embracing life to its natural end and dying with dignity, surrounded by love. To you, O Lord, ever patient with all of us, ever active in all of us, be praise and thanks for the life and impact Ronald Reagan has had upon us all. Support with your grace the Reagan family, and especially Mrs. Nancy Reagan, who stood by him in memorable moments of history and never left him in the long moments of difficult performance when the wheel turned all so slowly. Inspired by President Reagan, empower all of us, Lord, to employ our part in crumbling the walls of separation and in opening the gates to a globalized world. May our stillness here help us to remain faithful and patient with those suffering and to make decisions that will renew faith in the future. All-powerful God, fix America in your eternal patience, in your eternal act, as the wheel turns now and forever. Amen.
House Chaplain Daniel Coughlin, quoting T.S. Eliot in his invocation, "In the Capitol Rotunda, the wheel turns and is forever still." President Reagan's remains now on the catafalque in the center of the rotunda, still with a military guard immediately at their side, 4 men on each side, 1 at each end of the casket. Nancy Reagan, near the president's family, in the circle of dignitaries that surround the casket as it lies in state. We will hear this evening from Ted Stevens, Dennis Hastert, and Vice President Dick Cheney at 8:30 Eastern Time. The doors of the rotunda are to be opened to the public to pass by the remains of the president. An interesting prayer, Alan Lichtman, kind of reference to Ronald Reagan's take down this wall comment when Daniel Coughlin says, asks that the walls of separation on Earth crumble the walls of separation and open the gates to a globalized world, he asks in his prayer.
Yes.
And asking for decisions that will restore our faith in the future. Of course, Ronald Reagan, famous for his brimming confidence in the United States and in its future.
Absolutely. As I said before, Ronald Reagan restored conservatism politically because of his optimism and because of his inclusiveness. And it's interesting that we had made reference before to how Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, and other world leaders in the 1980s moved us towards the global economy. And the prayer made direct reference to globalization. I think we also talked about how the politics today are so much more polarized than the politics were, even during what seemed to be at the time major partisan warfare between Reagan and the Democrats. And the prayer also seemed to make reference towards perhaps an easing of those partisan divisions and partisan bitterness and more of a coming together as a nation, which was always the great vision of Ronald Reagan.
Always the vision and always expressed, though clearly the vision not always shared across political lines. And
by no means.
Even unto this day, a very large marker laid down by this president, still the subject of a great national debate, not least in this presidential election year.
Well, you know you're a great president when you stimulate those debates. You know, we don't have great debates about William Howard Taft today. We have great debates about Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy and Ronald Reagan, of course. And those debates are going to go on. They're going to inform and enrich the history of the 20th century for our lifetimes and beyond.
Alan Lichtman, if you'll stand by, as we wait for our speakers this evening, I want to invite into our conversation from Tucson, Arizona, Michael Schaller. He's an historian at the University of Arizona, author of Reckoning with Reagan, America and Its President in the 1980s. Good evening and welcome, Michael Schaller.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. I know you've been standing by as we waited for ceremonies to unfold here. I'm glad you're with us. We will hear in a moment from speakers this evening, but your thoughts as the president's funeral proceeds in great pomp and circumstance in Washington tonight.
Well, I'm grateful for Professor Lichtman's commentary. I learned a lot myself.
Thank you.
But I think, you know, as he pointed out in some ways, this is exactly the kind of ceremonial...
The nation was gripped by a powerful malaise. Inflation and unemployment were soaring, and the Soviet Union was winning the Cold War. By the time President Reagan left office, he had reversed the trend of ever-increasing government control over our lives, restored our defense capabilities, guided us through the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression, and set in motion policies which ultimately led to the collapse of the evil empire. His integrity, vision, and commitment were respected by all. But history's final judgment, I believe, will remember most his ability to inspire us. President Reagan put it best when he said, "The greatest leader is not necessarily the one who does the greatest things. He is the one that gets the people to do the greatest things." This president inspired Americans by reaching out far beyond what he could attain. Like a good coach, he understood the value of a goal isn't always in achieving it. Sometimes it's enough to simply look out into the future and remind people what is possible. And often, President Reagan achieved the impossible. He reminded us that government is not the solution. The solution lies in each of us. True American heroes are ordinary people who live their lives with extraordinary character and strength. President Reagan showed us freedom was not just a slogan. He actually brought freedom to hundreds of thousands of people around this globe by opposing oppressive regimes. Those of us from the World War II generation looked up to him for his moral courage. In him, we saw leadership of great men like Eisenhower, who led the way and moved us to follow. On a wintry day in 1981, Ronald Reagan stood on the steps that lie just behind these doors to deliver his first inaugural address. He spoke of a journal written by a young American who went to France in 1917 and died for the cause of freedom. From that journal, he read these words: "I will work. I will save. I will sacrifice. I will endure. I will fight cheerfully, and I will do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended upon me alone." Throughout his life, Ronald Reagan bore our burdens as if the income did depend on him alone. We will all remember him as an unparalleled leader and an exceptional man who lifted our nation and set the world on a new path. President Reagan achieved greatness in his life. Some might even argue he transcended it. He could not have accomplished this without Nancy. Nancy is one of the finest first ladies these United States have ever known. And the love Ronald and Nancy Reagan shared touched the hearts of people everywhere. In 1989, President Reagan delivered his farewell address from the Oval Office. In that speech, the president spoke of the shining city on a hill that, after 200 years, two centuries, still stands strong and true on the Granite Ridge. Now it is our turn to thank Ronald Reagan for making us believe in that shining city. And as we say farewell, his last words as president echo across this nation. If we listen, we will hear him whisper the humble words he used to sum up his revolution. All in all, not bad, not bad at all.
Alaskan Senator Ted Stevens at the podium, just feet from the casket of Ronald Reagan. Standing beside him, Dennis Hastert, who now approaches the microphone.
Mrs. Reagan, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, and distinguished guests, Ronald Reagan's long journey has finally drawn to a close. It is altogether fitting and proper that he has returned to this Capitol Rotunda, like another great son of Illinois, Abraham Lincoln, so the nation can say goodbye. This Capitol building is, for many, the greatest symbol of democracy and freedom in the world. It brings to mind the shining city on a hill, which President Reagan so often spoke. It is the right place to honor a man who so faithfully defended our freedom and so successfully helped extend the blessings of liberty to millions of people around the world. Mrs. Reagan, thank you for sharing your husband with us, for your steadfast love, and for your great faith. We pray for you and for your family in this time of great mourning. But as we mourn, we must also celebrate the life and the vision of one of America's greatest presidents. His story and values are quintessentially American. Born in Tampico, Illinois, and then raised in Dixon, Illinois, he moved west to follow his dreams. He brought with him a Midwest optimism, and he blended it with a Western can-do spirit. In 1980, the year of the Reagan Revolution, his vision of hope, of growth, of opportunity was exactly what the American people needed and wanted. His message touched the fundamental core that is deeply embedded in the American experience. President Reagan dared to dream that America had a special mission. He believed in the essential goodness of the American people, and that we had a special duty to promote peace and freedom for the rest of the world. Against the advice of the timid, he sent a chilling message to authoritarian governments everywhere that the civilized world would not rest until freedom reigned in every corner of the globe. While others worried, President Reagan persevered. When others weakened, President Reagan stood tall. When others stepped back, President Reagan stepped forward. And he did it all with great humility, with great charm, and with great humor. Tonight, we will open these doors and let the men and women who Ronald Reagan served so faithfully file past and say goodbye to a man who meant so much to so many. It is their being here that I think would mean more to him than any words that we may say. Because it was from America's great and good people that Ronald Reagan drew his strength. In the years ahead, we will tell our grandchildren about this night when we gathered here to honor the man from Illinois who became the son of California and then the son of all America. And then our grandchildren will tell their grandchildren and President Reagan's spirit and eternal faith in America will carry on. Ronald Reagan helped make our country and this world a better place to live. But he always believed that our best days were ahead of us, not behind us. I can still hear him say, with that twinkle in his eye, "You ain't seen nothing yet." President Reagan once said, "We make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give." 20 years ago, President Reagan stood on the beaches of Normandy to honor those who made a life by what they gave, recalling the men who scaled the cliffs and crossed the beaches in a merciless hail of bullets. He asked, "Who were these men? These ordinary men doing extraordinary things?" His answer was simple and direct. They were Americans. So I can think of no higher tribute or honor or title to confer upon Ronald Reagan than just to simply say he was an American. Godspeed, Mr. President. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Dennis Hastert, Illinois' Republican Congressman and Speaker of the House. Vice President Dick Cheney now approaches.
Mrs. Reagan,
podium.
Members of the President's family, colleagues, distinguished guests, members of the diplomatic corps, fellow citizens. Knowing that this moment would come has not made it any easier to see the honor guard and the flag draped before us and to begin America's farewell to President Ronald Reagan. He said goodbye to us in a letter that showed his great courage and love for America. Yet for his friends and for his country, the parting comes only now. And in this national vigil of mourning, we show how much America loved this good man and how greatly we will miss him. A harsh winter morning in 1985 brought the inaugural ceremony inside to this rotunda. And standing in this place for the 50th presidential inauguration, Ronald Reagan spoke of a nation that was hopeful, big-hearted, idealistic, daring, decent, and fair. That was how he saw America, and that is how America came to know him. There was a kindness, simplicity, and goodness of character that marked all the years of his life. When you mourn a man of 93, no one is left who remembers him as a child in his mother's arms. Ronald Wilson Reagan's life began in a time and place so different from our own, in a quiet town on the prairie on the 6th of February, 1911. Nell and Jack Reagan would live long enough to see the kind of man they had raised, but they could never know all that destiny had in store for the boy they called Dutch. And if they could witness this scene in 2004, their son taken to his rest with the full honors of the United States, they would be so proud of all he had done with the life they gave him and the things they taught him. President Reagan once said, "I learned from my father the value of hard work and ambition and maybe a little something about telling a story." That was the Ronald Reagan who confidently set out on his own from Dixon, Illinois, during the Great Depression, the man who would one day speak before cameras and crowds with such ease and self-command. "From my mother," said President Reagan, "I learned the value of prayer. My mother told me that everything in life happened for a purpose. She said all things were part of God's plan, even the most disheartening setbacks, and in the end, everything worked out for the best." This was the Ronald Reagan who had faith not just in his own gifts and his own future, but in the possibilities of every life. The cheerful spirit that carried him forward was more than a disposition. It was the optimism of a faithful soul who trusted in God's purposes and knew those purposes to be right and true. He once said, "There is no question I am an idealist," which is another way of saying, "I am an American." We usually associate that quality with youth, and yet one of the most idealistic men ever to become president was also the oldest. He excelled in professions that have left many others jaded and self-satisfied, and yet somehow remained untouched by the worst influences of fame or power. If Ronald Reagan ever uttered a cynical or cruel or selfish word, the moment went unrecorded. Those who knew him in his youth and those who knew him a lifetime later all remember his largeness of spirit, his gentle instincts, and a quiet rectitude that drew others to him. Seen now at a distance, his strengths as a man and as a leader are only more impressive. It's the nature of the city of Washington that men and women arrive, leave their mark, and go their way. Some figures who seemed quite large and important in their day are sometimes forgotten or remembered with ambivalence. Yet nearly a generation after the often impassioned debates of the Reagan years, what lingers from that time is almost all good. And this is because of the calm and kind man who stood at the center of events. We think back with appreciation for the decency of our 40th president and respect for all that he achieved. After so much turmoil in the 60s and 70s, our nation had begun to lose confidence, and some were heard to say that the presidency might even be too big for one man.
We continue with the state funeral of Ronald Reagan. This is On Point.
For decades, America had waged a Cold War, and few believed it could possibly end in our own lifetimes.